Almost 3 years after we started the last section of the Believe series, which is the 10 virtues, or the B part of Think, Act, Be Like Jesus, we reached the end, the virtue of humility. Humility is mentioned numerous times in the Bible, and like so many of these virtues, is best exemplified in the life of Jesus Christ. According to the Oxford Dictionary, humility is defined as a modest or low view of one's own importance. Merriam-Webster defines it as freedom from pride or arrogance, the quality or state of being humble. It is not humiliation. It's not a matter of low self-esteem. It is more a matter of humbleness. The Christianity.com website states, humility is often characterized as genuine gratitude, a lack of arrogance, and a modest view of oneself. However, the biblical definition goes beyond this. We are called upon to be humble followers of Christ and trust in the wisdom and salvation of God. Psalms 3:5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. True humility is seeing ourselves as we truly are, fallen in sin and helpless without God. Proverbs 22:4. Humility is the fear of the Lord. Its wages are riches and honor and life. Not only does being humble consist of trusting God and following His will, but furthermore, fearing the consequences of neglecting His commands for truth, love, work ethic, mercy, and others. Humility is recognizing the magnificent power of God and the potential retribution He will condemn upon us if we do not aim our purpose for His righteousness. In verses 13 to 15 of our Old Testament lesson today, the writer of Chronicles is emphasizing immediate retribution on Israel if she ignores her God, but it is no less applicable today for those who call on the Lord in repentance and faith. We are still called to humble ourselves before God and pray, and we are assured that He is always ready to listen to the prayers of a repentant people. I want you to look at the Old Testament, New Testament comparison. Verses from James, this is 4, 8 to 10. Come near to God, and He will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up. Some translations say He will exalt you. While wording quite different from our Old Testament passage or those verses from Chronicles, the concept is very similar. If we humble ourselves by coming near to God and staying near to Him, we cannot be led astray, and God will be attentive to us. This passage from 2 Chronicles, obviously for the nation of Israel, cautioning them to humble themselves and pray and seek God. If you're like me, do you ever wonder what God thinks of our nation now? Have you ever think about that? So much of what is being pushed on us and taught to our young people is the exact opposite of humility. Humility is understanding that God is in control and relinquishing our own pride and selfish desires and ambitions. But so much of the current ideas being promoted are about ego. It is about being in charge. Ultimately, it is about controlling other people's lives. Think about, and this bugs me worse than anything, think about gender-affirming care. Think about the proposed fixes for climate change. Think about so much of the pandemic recommendations. Think about kids being taught racism under the guise of CRT and diversity. And a myriad of other things in the news. None of these are for the benefit or the good of individual citizens, especially our young people. I can't help but think of Jesus' teaching in Luke. Things that cause people to stumble are bound to come, but woe to anyone through whom they come. It would be better for them to be thrown into the sea with a millstone tied around their neck than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. By the way, that verse is also in Matthew and Mark. This is the absolute opposite of the virtue of humility that God wants of us. What kind of pride, what kind of ego leads people to think that these things are within our control? When has an imperfect humanity ever determined the gender of a newborn, let alone change it once he or she is born? Not only does this defy logic and common sense, it is definitely not biblical, and I would say it's even evil. In our second lesson, Paul's letter to the Philippians, he tells them to be like-minded, be one in spirit and of one mind. Now, this does not mean that everyone must have uniformity of thought, good luck with that, but that they must be willing to work together. Paul also tells them to do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Paul felt that those who were selfish and conceited were the enemies of harmony and unity within the church. In Galatians, Paul lists selfish ambition among the acts of the flesh. Conceit, or pride, tries to lift a person above others, which promotes conflict rather than harmony. By contrast, humility accepts a place of service with concern for the needs and the interests of others. Paul wants his readers to have the same mindset as Christ. Despite the fact that we are so uniquely and radically different in the person of Christ, Paul wants us to have, or strive to have, the same self-sacrificing humility and love for others. Verse 7 says that Christ made himself nothing. Other translations say that he emptied himself. While he did not give up his deity, his place in the Trinity, he did give up the glory that goes with being in very nature God. He humbled himself by becoming a human. And he also took on the very nature of a servant. Think about that. What does a servant do? He obeys. The totality or completeness of Christ's obedience was fulfilled through his death on the cross. This servitude is also the main point of our gospel lesson today. In washing his disciples' feet, Jesus is doing the work of a servant or a slave and setting the standard for his disciples and us to follow. They shouldn't aspire to dominate, but they should be eager to serve. He actually tells them that he washed their feet as an example for them to serve others as he has done for them. Verse 17 in the gospel, now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. One study Bible note on this verse. Intellectual perception is not enough, but must be backed up by commitment of life. This does not mean that our works are the basis of our acceptance by God, but that they are the evidence of a true faith. Trust and obedience are inseparable. In talking about the virtue of humility, I want to tell a story of a humble person who served others. Mother Teresa came to mind, but I settled on the story of Desmond Doss. Does anybody here know who that is? Anybody seen the movie Hacksaw Ridge? Awesome movie. Most of this information comes from, the website was Desmond Doss, the real story. On April 1st, 1942, Desmond Doss joined the U.S. Army. Of the 16 million men in uniform during World War II, only 431 received the Congressional Medal of Honor. One of these was placed around the neck of a young Seventh-day Adventist who during combat had not killed a single enemy soldier. In fact, he refused to carry a gun. His only weapons were his Bible and his faith in God. When he joined the Army, Desmond assumed that his classification as a conscientious objector would not require him to carry a weapon. He decided, I did not realize in World War II there were over 20,000 conscientious objectors who served, either served in supply or the medical, which that was news to me. They were classed as conscientious objectors and still served. He wanted to be an Army combat medic. As luck would have it, he was assigned to an infantry rifle company. His refusal to carry a gun caused a lot of trouble among his fellow soldiers. They viewed him with disdain and called him a misfit. One man in the barracks warned him, "Doss, as soon as we get into combat, I'll make sure you won't come back alive." His commanding officers also wanted to get rid of the skinny Virginian who spoke with a gentle southern drawl. They saw him as a liability. Nobody believed a soldier without a weapon was worthwhile. They tried to intimidate him, scold him, assign him extra tough duties, and declared him mentally unfit for the Army. Then they attempted to court-martial him for refusing a direct order to carry a gun. But they failed to find a way to toss him out, and he refused to leave. He believed his duty was to obey God and serve his country, but it had to be in that order. His unwavering convictions were most important. Desmond had been raised with a fervent belief in the Bible. When it came to the Ten Commandments, he applied them personally. During childhood, his father had purchased a large framed picture at an auction. It portrayed the Ten Commandments with colorful illustrations. Next to the words, "Thou shalt not kill," was a drawing of Cain holding a club and standing over the body of his dead brother Abel. Little Desmond would look at that picture and ask, "Why did Cain kill Abel? How in the world could a brother do such a thing?" In Desmond's mind, God said, "If you love me, you won't kill." With that picture firmly embedded in his mind, he determined that he would never take a life. However, there was another commandment that Desmond took just as seriously as the sixth. It was the fourth commandment. His religious upbringing included weekly church attendance on the seventh day. The Army was exasperated to discover that he had yet another personal requirement. He asked for a weekly pass so he could attend church every Saturday. This meant two strikes against him. His fellow soldiers saw this Bible-reading Puritan as being totally out of sync with the rest of the Army. So they ostracized him, bullied him, called him awful names, and cursed at him. His commanding officers also made his life difficult. Things began turning around when the men discovered that this quiet, unassuming medic had a way to heal the blisters on their march-weary feet. And if someone fainted from heat stroke, this medic was at his side offering his own canteen. Desmond never held a grudge. With kindness and gentle courtesy, he treated those who had mistreated him. He lived the golden rule, do to others as you what you would have them do to you. That's Matthew 7:12. Desmond served in combat on the islands of Guam, Leyte, saying that right, and Okinawa. In each military operation, he exhibited extraordinary dedication to his fellow men. While others were taking life, he was busy saving life. When the cry, "Medic," rang out on the battlefield, he never considered his own safety. He repeatedly ran into the heat of battle to treat a fallen comrade and carry him back to safety. All this while enemy bullets whizzed past and mortar shells exploded around him. Several times while treating a wounded soldier, Desmond was so close to enemy lines, he could hear the whispering of Japanese voices. In May of 1945, as German troops were surrendering on the other side of the world, Japanese troops were fiercely defending to their last man the only remaining barrier, which was Okinawa and the Maeda Escarpment, which was actually what the soldiers dubbed the Hacksaw Ridge. They were defending the last man, an Allied invasion of their homeland. The men in Desmond's division were repeatedly trying to capture the Maeda Escarpment, which was an imposing rock face that the soldiers dubbed Hacksaw Ridge. After the company had secured the top of the cliff, the Americans were stunned when suddenly enemy forces rushed them in a vicious counterattack. Okinawa was actually considered the bloodiest battle of World War II. I didn't realize that either. But officers ordered an immediate retreat. Soldiers rushed to climb back down the steep cliff. All the soldiers except one. Less than one third of the men made it back down. The rest lay wounded, scattered across enemy soil, abandoned and left for dead, if they weren't already. One lone soldier disobeyed orders and charged back into the firefight to rescue as many of his men as he could before he either collapsed or died trying. His iron determination and unflagging courage resulted in at least 75 lives that day, May 5th, 1945, which was his Sabbath day. With each wounded soldier he lowered down the cliff, he would say a simple prayer, "Just one more, God." Eventually, the Americans took Hacksaw Ridge. Okinawa was captured inch by bloody inch. Several days later, during an unsuccessful night raid, Desmond was severely wounded. Hiding in a shell hole with two riflemen, a Japanese grenade landed at his feet. The explosion sent him flying. The shrapnel tore into his leg and up to his hip. He treated his own wounds as best he could. While attempting to reach safety, he was hit by a sniper's bullet that shattered his arm. His brave actions as a combat medic were done, but not before insisting that his litter bearers take another man first before rescuing him. Wounded in pain and losing blood, he still put others ahead of his own safety. He would choose to die so another could live. After all, that's what he read in his Bible. Such was the character demonstrated by Jesus Christ. Dulce knew that Jesus lived to serve others, and through his obedience to God and service to his fellow man, Dulce lived a life of true humility. While we will never be in a situation like Dulce's, I hope we won't, we can all humble ourselves and seek God in prayer.